From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. It's no secret that Southwest Florida is under invasion. From Burmese pythons to black and white tegu lizards, knifefish to lionfish, melaleuca trees to coiling kudzu plants. This is undeniably a hot spot for invasive species of plants, animals, and fish. Now wildlife conservation officials are enlisting the help of civilians through the use of apps to track these invaders. We'll learn more about that from the man who oversees South Florida's invasive species program. Plus, soldiers returning from war can feel alone or misunderstood, and some are suffering from the invisible wounds of war, PTSD, or traumatic brain injuries. A local program presents fitness challenges to reinvigorate veterans, while at the same time creating a social network that has the potential to save vets from developing PTSD. We talk with the director of Home Base about a 5K and 10K run happening this weekend to bring these men and women together. But first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A local fitness challenge brings together post-9/11 veterans, some of whom may suffer from PTSD or head injuries, to create not only a fitness regime, but a social network. While the focus is on physical well-being, the power of vets spending time with other vets is also having a positive impact on their mental well-being. We'll talk about the Home Base program in just a bit. But first, have you seen a Burmese python in the wilds of South Florida? Have you ever hooked a bullseye snakehead on your fishing line? Or trimmed back the unstoppable old world climbing fern? Well, you've seen South Florida's invasive species problem firsthand. What can be a nuisance for homeowners or motorists is a life or death struggle for native plants, animals, and fish that are being pushed out by these exotic pests. But there are ways you can help, and that's what we're here to talk about today. A variety of apps are out there to turn every Floridian with a smartphone into an amateur science sleuth who can help wildlife officials track these invasive species. Joining us today is Mike Bodel, a scientist with South Florida Water Management District's Invasive Species Program. He's here to talk with us about invasives in South Florida and what tools are out there to combat that threat. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, happy to be here, Julie.
Also joining the program is Fish Brain app developer Johan Atby. He joins the show from Stockholm, Sweden, to talk about how this new fisheye view of invading fish species can help our understanding of what's happening underwater. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
Invasive species in Florida. Do you have a horror story with pythons, lizards, fish, or more? You can call in and share your story and your thoughts on how Florida should handle it by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Mike, here in Florida, in preparing for our show, I read that Florida now has more invasive species of lizard than we have of native species of lizard. How did that happen?
It's just an amazing development due to apparently some breeding facilities of some reptiles based in South Florida did sustain hurricane damage of one sort or another in different storms. And, of course, there's escapes. These reptiles know how to get out of even the most well-planned cages and enclosures. And apparently there's rumors of intentional releases.
Why would someone do that?
Pet owners who no longer seem to be enamored of their animals.
Oh, they think it's a great little pet and then they decide maybe not.
Sometimes, yes. Of course, now we've succeeded in getting the Burmese python and other large reptiles of concern banned for sale and transport within Florida. But those who had them before and then maybe started a family, decided they didn't want a 12-foot snake in the house anymore.
And all of its potential 12-foot babies?
Indeed.
Why is Florida such a hotbed of invasive species like that?
Well, it's the plants that do so well here in a young climate, 5,000 or 10,000-year-old environments that have open ecological niches. The pythons are well attuned, for instance, as one of the invasive reptiles to the environmental conditions here. In fact, one United States Geological Society survey model predicted they could survive as far north as Tennessee.
Woo. Wow. I don't think anybody expects that.
Based upon their climatic tolerances in their native Asia.
Oh.
Yes,
so you're with the Invasive Species Program in South Florida Water Management District. So what area does that mean that you cover?
Well, this agency, the South Florida Water Management, covers 16 counties, all are part of 16 counties from Orlando to the Keys. And so a lot of the relic Everglades properties are owned by this agency. And, of course, Everglades National Park and lots of other federal and state partners have properties in the vicinity, in the region, and are all being affected and on the lookout for all these non-native animals and plants.
But what are some of the most common invasives that you or people in general would encounter in Florida?
Well, of course, of the reptiles, we've almost lost our cute little Carolina annual. Some people often call them chameleons. The green little cute little animals on land have almost completely been displaced by the Cuban brown annual, the Cuban night annual, which is a larger predator. Cuban tree frogs are very omnivorous and have just about caused the demise in many areas of our native tree frog.
I've only seen a couple of those little green ones. And they're bright green. Are those the ones?
The bright green annals on land are just about eliminated as far as I see. I can still find them out in lakes and waterways where apparently the Cuban brown annals don't do so well and the other predators of the native green annal. Of course, the plants that we have most problems with include Brazilian pepper tree, which is the exotic plant with the largest coverage in South Florida, surviving just fine up to, about the Orlando area and along the coasts a bit further north. But as you drive along unmanaged properties, you see a curtain often of dense screen of Brazilian pepper tree, which is not very productive. It also isn't a good one for helping us with prescribed burning of conservation lands. It doesn't carry fire well at all. And so it can sort of halt our properties if we're trying to manage them with prescribed fire.
Mm. And then what about the Melaleuca we always hear about?
Yeah, Melaleuca is one thing. The impetus to form the Florida Exotic Pest Plant Council in the 80s was strictly that one species because people were saying things like it was spreading across the Everglades at 50 acres a day, which is something of a fallacy, but you could argue that.
I'm thinking of them trying to visualize this.
But if you, from the maps we generated in the 80s, it was about 500,000 acres by that time, and it had been introduced by about 1918. So there was the argument, well, it must have spread at 50 acres a day. But anyway, that's really sort of a fallacy. But in fits and starts, it did cover 500,000 acres in very little time. Just within a century. And we began, again, this group called the Florida Exotic Pest Plant Council to combat it. Now, of course, the Pest Plant Council maintains a list of invasive plants, numbering about 200 of the most invasive problem plants and others that are slightly less invasive. And we also started lobbying for money and legislation to prohibit it, just as we had to later lobby for Burmese python prohibitions. So Melaleuca got going and really was the driving force because we really saw vast heads of it overwhelming what was left of Everglades properties, in particular because it is such a well-adapted aquatic tree. Imported again, probably with the argument that they could make something productive out of what was then considered a wasteland, these wetland wastelands called the Everglades.
Yeah, there wasn't much regard for it in the beginning.
Indeed, but, not at all.
Well, it's not only
So Melaleuca's had tens and tens of millions spent upon it, and we've got it on the run on public properties.
Well, that's good news. At least we're kind of getting somewhere with that one.
Indeed.
But, of course, then it opened the door to a whole lot of other plants that have been identified as invasive and animals. And it's not just on land, but it's also out in the ocean. We're hearing a lot more about invasive fish species. And that's where we have Johan Atby from FishBrain on the phone. Johan, you started an app as a social media project for just for people who like to fish. When did you realize that it could be used to help track invasive fish species?
I think that came about a year ago when we were growing the user base. Now we have 3 million users. And we saw users posting thousands of catches every day. And we saw the opportunity really to give something back to the community because a lot of the fishermen, or most fishermen, they care a lot about conservation projects and the environment. So we thought now we were at this site, so we can actually, some organization could actually leverage our data that users are capturing and gathering on fish banks and share that information with non-profit so they can actually use this information to making recommendations and also coming up with recommendations to our users. So if they log something, if they track something that is an endangered species or if it's an invasive species, come up with recommendations based on that. So we started that about a year ago.
Well, I was really surprised. I started looking at Fish Brain online, and I was learning how many people use it. And I can't imagine a better idea, because everybody likes to tell their fish stories. And then if you have an actual app where you can tell your fish stories with video and photos, it's no wonder that you have so many people signed up. And here in our area in Florida, we have 250,000 users on that site. And now they're going to be able to track 15 freshwater exotic fish. How is the app able to do that? I mean, is there a separate section? Like, here's the brag section of what I caught, and then here's another one where I suspect it might be an invasive species?
It's really integrated into the experience we're having today on Fish Bank. So users are logging their catches. So then they set this is the species. And if this is one of the species that's on the list of invasive species, and we inform the user that the recommendation is not to put it back in the wild again, but actually consumed it. And then also we send it some information over to the organization.
So I know so that
it's
you're
an integrated part of the flow today. So no additional steps for users. They're doing exactly like they used FishBrain now for a couple of years.
So it's very user-friendly. And you're partnering with the Fish and Wildlife Commission here in Florida to use this app. Are you using it for the same purpose anywhere else in the world?
Yes, we're also working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, not just for invasive species, but also for endangered species, because fishermen, they're out in the wild, so they can also report if they track a mountain lion or some other endangered species as well.
That's really interesting, and it's a great way to get a whole lot of eyes on the ground where agencies probably couldn't possibly employ that many people to be looking for in that many different places and things. We have a caller on the line. This is Marcus from Fort Myers. What would you like to ask, Marcus?
Thank you for your program. You know, a couple of things real quick. I think partly what the first person was saying is that we're really trying to close the barn door after the cows have escaped already on so many of these things. For decades and even hundreds of years, many of these animals have come here through many different ways. And Fish and Wildlife, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission and the Florida Department of Agriculture are completely on top of all of this, like nobody else's business, because they are essentially the leaders in setting new precedents for all of these things. The keeping of reptiles in Florida is completely restricted on anything that might be invasive. The same thing goes for plants. The same thing goes for trade. And there was a program like this that this station had about 8 or 9 years ago, where they had a very qualified panel of experts talking about it. At the end of the program, I called in and I said, listen, the bottom line is we can slow this, we can delay it, but we have to plan for it, because everything, including this great app that I'm hearing about now, and I love the sound of it, can only slow it. It can't stop it. We can't, because when you think about all the travel, trade, and commerce and the effects of global warming on how these species are even doing better in a warmer now than ever climate, I think that we really have to allow for this to be a great help in slowing it and planning for it. But I don't think that anybody is foolish enough to say that we can ever stop it. We have to try to figure out how this environment, how these ecosystems are going to be in 5 and 10 and 20 years down the road, because the invasives are coming. Even if you stopped everything, they're here, and there's so much more coming you couldn't stop. Even if you stop the pet trade and agriculture, you can't stop these things from coming here, because the way the world is so globalized now, Trump or no Trump, it's going to happen.
So I guess what we're saying is that the question might be for Mike is, what kind of plan is there? I mean, obviously he's saying that there's no possibility of eradicating invasive species, but is there a plan of working around?
Well, indeed. Of course, like the caller said, so many, the barn door is open already. So many have gotten here already. Even eradication seems very unlikely. But we do at the University of Florida, we've adopted, modeled on Australian CSIRO's risk assessment program, the Florida risk assessment for plants program analyzes literature and experience and other things around the world to predict the plants that will be will most likely be troublesome. And so whether they should be allowed to be imported, sold, or cultivated in Florida is one thing that that tool can help us decide. And the Florida Department of Agriculture enforces their prohibited plant list, which does prevent transport, cultivation, and sale of the plants on their list, which again integrates things like this risk assessment to be able to use the latest knowledge of really international databases and publications to guide whether a plant is likely to be a problem here if it's not here already.
It sounds like information sharing and communication is kind of a key there, especially internationally.
Sure, it is.
I think you're bringing up a very important point here, because even though we have FishPen has most of our users in the States, FishPen is a global app, and I think that really helps a lot with it, because even this is a global problem, even though you see the effects locally, that you can actually track in FishPen how these sea species, how they migrate and how that goes from one country to another and stuff like that. So this is really a global problem, even though you see the effects locally.
That's pretty interesting, too, to be able to see how they the patterns of where they're moving to and how long it's taking them to get there, things like that, too, and that travel time. We are talking about invasive species in Southwest Florida. What have you seen, and have you ever used one of the apps that we're talking about today to track the invasive plants or animals? Give us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Mike Bodel with South Florida Water Management District. This isn't the only app, though. FishBrain isn't the only one that's out there. Can you tell me about a couple of others?
Well, yeah. One that, the Florida Exotic Pest Plant Council pushed and helped support its development at the University of Georgia with National Park Service, Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission, Department of Agriculture, and other supporters is called, the app on your device is called I've Got One, I-V-E-G-O-T-1, the numeral one. And I've Got One is an app where you can report your observations, and then the mother database at the University of Georgia called EdMaps then integrates the data into maps, mainly for Florida so far, but EdMaps also supports similar apps in the southeastern U.S. and other states from the same database. So they're generating national databases and maps of occurrences of things that are reported. And so as more and more are reported, you don't get just occurrence maps. You also get density of reports maps, which is pretty interesting. So you can sort of see perhaps trends over time, but certainly where the most reports are coming from is probably where that plant or that plant may have been first introduced. It does list different organism types by order of animals and diseases such as fungi. And of course, plants were sort of the reason EdMaps and I've Got One was started, but the animal reports have been very interesting to watch as they have developed over the years.
Well, I wanted to ask you something about that. I mean, I'm not really that up on what one snake looks like next to another snake,
yeah,
and which one's invasive and which one's not. So I'm pretty sure I would hop on there and say, oh my gosh, look at this. This has got to be invasive. How do you filter out things that really are invasive or not?
Yeah, EdMaps and I've Got One isn't quite as good at that. It is not really an expert app, but close to one, depending upon decent technical identification skills.
Yeah, well, I'm just wondering, so do they kind of filter through that when it gets up to EdMaps?
They do, yes. They often check with not questionable reports, but yeah, reports they have questions about.
Yeah, but mine would be a questionable report, because I'm just not that versed.
Yeah, but there are tools and training available both on EdMaps and other ways. There's training videos for animal identification, plant identification, and then agencies like the Florida Game and Fish Conservation Commission have got tools online to help make sure you know a python from a rat snake here in Florida, especially if you're going out on one of the python roundups. And make sure you only take non-native species.
Yeah, well, I can guarantee you I won't be going on that. and I wanted to ask also, Johan, fishermen and anglers, they tend to know their subject, and they know they're pretty versed on their fish. Do you ever have people that report something that's an invasive that's not?
Yeah, definitely, because there's a lot of fishermen, they travel. It's super popular to go to Florida to fish. And if you're not local, you normally don't know the fishes. So that can definitely happen. And we're working on various ways of actually dealing with that. There are some really cool stuff you can do with machine learning and artificial intelligence, where you can actually automatically detect the species of the fish. So that's something we are actually, we haven't launched it yet, but we're currently working on that one. So there are different ways you can actually leverage technology for this. And also, of course, we have this database with all the species, so you can at least look at them and see, compare the fish you're holding with what's in the database. But do some anglers report the wrong species? Yes, they do. But also, you can report, if you see something in fish, other fishermen can report it. And it's a very friendly, it's a very helpful community. So they really want to help each other. So if something is mislabeled, normally one wants to correct them and say, this is not this species, but actually this species.
Yeah, and we have a lot of people down here in Southwest Florida, especially, I know, who they can just barely look at a fish and tell you immediately what it is. And once they get on your app, they would be able to see the photos and be able to put people in the right direction pretty easily.
Yes.
And like you said, it's kind of like a community, you know, like the Facebook of fish, kind of.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's how we got started with FishBrain, because if you're on Facebook, you see all the content you see there is very generic. You have very, very thin discussions. If you have a passion, a hobby for something, you want to share your experiences with like-minded. And when you do that, you can have a more deep discussion. You can have a more engaged discussion and also learn something from those interactions. And that's also the opportunity to actually to gather data that we're now leveraging.
Yeah. Do you think that people are kind of scratching the surface of the problem with invasive species by making these types of observations? Or do you think they're getting some pretty good data, like more data than what we've ever had before?
I think certainly, in my opinion,
more data than available before, because today we have thousands of catches being logged every day. Of course, luckily, not all of them are invasive species. But we're at the point already with where we're capturing thousands of catches every day.
Yeah, and Mike, what do you think?
I agree completely. The EDMAPS, the Early Detection and Distribution Mapping Service, their maps have just grown so tremendously since their creation about, 10, 15 years ago. You can sort by, if you want to write a letter to your congressman, you can even sort the maps by congressional districts. Things that can help you as a member of the public argue for the management of invasive species.
Yeah, and I wonder how much was not reported before we had this type of technology, with citizens being able to, you know, throw in what they've seen.
Indeed, there really wasn't much. There weren't many ways at all that I'm aware of until this integrative, readily accessed, especially through these apps, type of things were developed.
All right. Well, we have a phone call coming in from Dave. Dave's on the phone. What would you like to say?
Yes, this question for Mike. Mike, since the subject's about invasive species, I have a bug, invasive bug. It's called Sri Lanka evil weevil. And it's I have acres of leech nuts and the special exotic fruits, trees. And since 2000, it was invaded Florida. And there is no way to get rid of these. Is there any suggestion I have to get rid of these? I'll take the answer on the line. Thank you.
Okay, so it's a Sri Lankan weevil?
Yes.
Have you heard of this one?
It is a generalist feeder, is my understanding, not as an entomologist. But I've heard that there may be some efforts from the USDA, who conduct biological control research in the U.S., into looking for control agents of things that are as threatening as the Sri Lankan weevil, especially because they're threatening agriculture and not, you know, on down to natural areas and conservation properties. But I haven't heard of a specific focus program yet. I could give you the numbers of folks in the USDA entomology biocontrol programs who would know specifically if they have a program underway for the Sri Lankan weevil.
Okay. If you could, when we get done with the show, maybe give those numbers to our producer. And then when our caller maybe can give us a call back later, and we can give those to him. So I wanted to ask you also, Mike, If people don't download these apps, is there anything that they can do to help combat invasive species?
Well, certainly there can. I mean, the animals, of course, are mobile. They're a bit less controllable. But just even managing, for instance, Old World Climbing Fern on your property can be a big benefit, because Old World Climbing Fern spreads by its dust-like spores and obviously has made its way across the entire peninsula. But still, controlling local populations, when your neighbor might have controlled it and you haven't, you're really not getting very far. So being aware of some of them, when you see your lawn overtaken by Mexican heather, which is what people are seeing a lot of now, a small plant with purple flowers that's spreading in lawns, and I think by lawn surface contaminants, it can be readily controlled. And although some people are calling it Florida snow and may prefer it to their lawn.
There's that. And then also there's reporting. Can people go online and report or call in? Is that something on the FWC?
Well, FWC is a great resource online for reporting fish and some plant materials, and that's available on the Game and Freshwater Fish Conservation Commission's website.
Okay, and we have links to all of these websites, including FishBrain. I wanted to thank both of you for coming on the show today. I want to leave it right there, but I wanted to thank Mike Bodel with the South Florida Water Management District and also Johan Atby with FishBrain from Stockholm. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, returning from fighting a war overseas can leave many veterans feeling disjointed, misunderstood, and ultimately stressed and alone. We'll talk with one of many local groups seeking to create a place where vets feel they belong and are understood. That's coming up next. Thank you.